Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Should we give money to beggars? It might do wonders for my karma, but could it negatively impact theirs? So this is one of the great justifications, rationalizations. We say, well, I'm not going to give money to the poor because clearly they must be poor for a reason. And so why would I want to interfere with what's the divine plan? No. And here's the thing about karma, divine plan, destiny. We're all interwoven. There are times in satsang where I've shared different stories from the scriptures of the way that different karmic threads interweave together. Whether it's Shravan Kumar and King Dasharath and Bhagwan Ram, like three individual lives, but how they weave together. Whether it's so many different stories that I won't go into now, but we've spoken about these in the past a lot. My karma means my action. So when we talk about it doing wonders for my karma, it's not the exact correct terminology in any case. Karma is just action. The results of that action are what we refer to as karmic fruit. And kind of the sum total of that becomes what we call our destiny. Right? All of our karma gives us where we are. Now, sure, someone's destiny up until this exact moment, from the sum total of all of their past actions that created a whole variety of different situations, has led them to be poor and a beggar in the same way that it has led you to be exactly where you are. Every one of us is exactly where we are in this moment because of the sum total of all of our past karmas. So you could say right here, right now, is our destiny. But somebody to be poor and hungry and homeless in front of you has now brought in a whole new element to it. Now the universe has put them into your karmic journey. Now it's no longer their own journey on some other part of the world, which of course, on the deepest level, is connected to us anyway. But here, on the most logistic, pragmatic level, they've essentially landed in your lap. You're walking down the street, and someone says to you, please give me money. That's very different from someone being poor, seemingly disconnected to you. Okay? So now we've got their destiny interweaving with your destiny. And now the question is, what happens when someone says to us, when we're walking down the street or driving in our car, and we see someone who's poor, someone who's homeless, someone who's hungry? What happens inside of us? Well, if we're not jaded, and if we're not trying to convince ourselves that the spiritual way to be is disconnected and cut off and indifferent, our hearts bleed. Something inside of us happens when we see a starving, hungry, poor, homeless person. And if nothing inside of you happens, examine your life, because you've cut yourself off from your heart in some very tragic way. And chances are that's going to impact you in a lot of other places. If you can walk by a hungry person, a homeless person, and not have your heart break, it may be a good time to take a little bit of a break from the busyness and hecticness of your life and reconnect with your heart. Because it means that in your busyness, in your distraction, or in the achievement of whatever you've decided your life goals are, that you've actually disconnected yourself from life at the core that weaves through all of us, that river of life, that spirit that runs through all of us. So our hearts break. And that's exactly how it should be. That's how you know you're still human. The dilemma on a pragmatic level, number one, of course, is, well, most of us don't have enough money to feed everyone on the street. And so then you're in sort of this bind of, well, who do I feed? How do I do it? And you know, I take inspiration from children in this, because children have got a very, very beautiful way of not being cut off, not being disconnected, not having their hearts closed. And when children walk down the street, what do? They give everything they have to the homeless people, right? Somebody talks to a child, especially if they're not used to it. I remember when I was young and we used to go from Los Angeles to New York for Thanksgiving holiday to visit my grandparents. Now in LA, and those times, this was 40 years ago, the homeless population was segregated from the non-homeless population much more than it was in New York. Now, homelessness in LA has gotten horrible and it's everywhere. But 40 years ago, you could live in LA for years and years and years and never see a beggar on the street. We then would go to New York for Thanksgiving and the streets were full of them. And I remember, because I used to love New York had something that LA didn't, which was the ability to buy things on the street. I mean, LA didn't have much of a street life, and it was, you know, shopping centers and stores, but you had to get in the car and drive. And New York was, you'd walk down the street and there's the pretzel guy and there's the chestnut guy. And so I loved to buy pretzels, chestnuts. I was never a hot dog eater, but, you know, the vegetarian options on the street. And what I always used to do was ask my dad to give me money, because I loved the independence of it. I loved being able to have my own money and buy my own, you know, hot chocolate or pretzel. And inevitably, by the time we got to the first pretzel stand, I would have to turn and ask my dad for more money. And he'd always be like, I gave you a $20 bill when we started this walk. Where did it go? Or maybe he gave me, you know, tens and fives and a mix, whatever. And inevitably, by that time, I had given it all out to every beggar on the street. And I wasn't unique in that. It's not about, look how different I was. This was how children are. When children come from abroad to India and see the beggars on the street, it's always a question. Can we feed them? Can we bring them home? It's how children's hearts are. And it's beautiful. And so I always take a lesson from that, which is give with an open heart. Give with the faith that kids have. Like, I knew I could give out every dollar in my hands and then I would turn around and there would always be enough money for a pretzel. That I didn't have to hold on to anything in order to make sure I got my pretzel. And it's just such a beautiful way to have faith that as we are confronted in our life with those in need, to be able to give without worrying about, well, oh my God, what about me? And just that awareness that in giving, so I will receive. That I'm just a trustee. I mean, nothing is mine anyway. It's just been given to me to do something good with. But on a logistic and pragmatic level, the dilemma becomes none of us has enough money to give to everyone or to give enough to everyone. And of course, then we end up with situations where you've got, you know, mafia situations and things where it's not just kids begging, but actually a whole system of kids being utilized by mafia to get money. And this is what breaks your heart even more, and it's what requires us to be intelligent. And not, for example, give money out of car windows in the middle of the streets of Delhi, where once you give money to one, 50 of them come in from the sidelines and rush into traffic that's now moving. And inevitably, somebody ends up getting hit by a car. But just because we don't necessarily give everyone in every circumstance doesn't mean that we should close our hearts. We should not. We should actually hold on and value that heartbreaking. And if we can't give that one for some reason, like, I know this kid is part of the mafia and the guy's, you know, sitting on the bench over there on the side of the busy street. And if I do give this kid, 50 other ones are going to rush into a busy street of Delhi. But allow your heart to break anyway. Because in that broken heart, you will be inspired to do something for other children. You will be inspired to help, which we all must. And that's our calling. And so, should we give money to every single beggar we see? If you can do it safely, yeah, why not? I mean, who are we to decide who's deserving and who's not? There's a beautiful line in a poem by Khalil Gibran that says something like, and I hate that I have to paraphrase because he's so perfectly beautiful. I just can't remember exactly the line, but it says something like, if God, if the universe, if the divine has deemed this person worthy of their days and their nights, who am I to decide that they are unworthy of whatever I have to give? Like, who am I to decide who's worthy? If the divine has decided they are worthy of their days and their nights, surely they are worthy of all else from me. So, yeah, if you can give safely without kids rushing into a busy street, give. It'll help them and it'll help you. Don't think about it as for your good karma. Think about it as a way to keep your heart open in the midst of days that are so busy and distracted. Think of it as a way to remind you that we are all connected. And it doesn't mean you have to give them everything. Keep change on hand. Keep fruit on hand. Keep packs of biscuits on hand, whatever it may be. When I lived in San Francisco, and I would pass these homeless people every day on the way from the, not the subway, it was an above ground public transportation kind of train, I would keep, you know, sandwiches and loaves of bread and things like that in my bag because I knew I was going to pass them. So just plan ahead. Keeps your heart open, keeps you connected. And don't worry about it negatively impacting their karmic journey. It won't, I promise. They've been put in front of you for a reason. And that reason is for both of you to benefit from that interaction. And lastly, if you can't give them money or food, maybe because you don't actually have any with you at that time, maybe because it is a busy street in a big city and you can't safely give it to them, don't avert your eyes. At least look at them. Don't pretend they don't exist. It's hard. It's hard to look at that and not do something. But that's critical for us. And it's critical for them. Even if you can't give them money, they are still human. And they deserve to be seen as humans. And even if you don't have something to give them, you can give them the gift of being seen. And you can give yourself the spiritual practice of seeing that which you can't change, but that which must be seen. And that's a really critical spiritual practice for all of us. So if I'm in Delhi and we're stopped at a light and someone comes up for money, I don't give it to them because I know it's not safe. But I make sure to make eye contact. I make sure to see them with as much love in my heart as I possibly can. And not to avert my eyes. Not to pretend I don't see them. Not to tell the driver to move ahead a little bit. Because then we suffer and we lose. because we disconnect ourselves from life. And then we are depriving those who are already without so much. We're depriving them of their very humanity, of their ability to be seen. So at least give them that.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Ignorance is definitely not bliss. Ignorance might be a numbing sensation, a bit of superficial level enjoyment, maza aata hai, usi tarah ki maza, right? But you can't really be in bliss with ignorance. Because otherwise, what's the source of your bliss, right? Where does bliss come from? I mean, you can't order it on Amazon. Where does it come from? So it's either going to come from outside or from inside. If it's going to come from outside, and I'm in a state of ignorance, what are my options, right? Drugs, alcohol, that type of musti, right? Well, that's not bliss. That's called chemical intoxication. And you come down. It's got a half-life, a very short half-life. In a few hours, it's over. Then you're hungover. So that's not really bliss. Things like parties or movies or shopping trips or a good meal, you couldn't actually call them bliss. You might say you enjoyed the food, but you'd have to be living a really shallow life for the most bliss you get to come from just a meal or a movie. Sure, you enjoy it. But if you don't have an inner bliss for something you're experiencing outside to hook into, it's going to be really superficial. Then it's just enjoyment, momentary pleasure. Some reward chemicals going in our brain. It's not bliss. So the peace that you want, it's also not peace. Because the truth really is, at the end of the day, when you lie down to go to sleep, we know a lot more than we let on during the day. We're not quite as stupid as we may look or as we may act in order to convince ourselves that we are happy and everything is great, right? In order to sort of curate our identities on social media. as though this cappuccino with, you know, the flower drawn in the foam that I've taken a picture of and pasted with a selfie really is the highest source of bliss? Well, we know it's not. And in a quiet moment at the end of the day, we know we're not blissful. So ignorance doesn't actually lead to the bliss or the peace. We have to stay very, very busy to keep ourselves from being quiet enough to realize, my God, I'm actually not happy at all, or certainly not deeply happy. And so it's a beautiful question that you ask. You say for our generation, for the younger generation, and it's interesting because you're right, the older generation really did seem much more able to find it. And the reason is, interestingly, they were less drawn by a lot of this external world. There was a lot more emphasis on spirituality, on values. I mean, if you asked your grandparents how many hours in the work week your grandfather worked, it's very unlikely, unless he was, you know, bonded laborer somewhere, you know, the equivalent of sort of a slave somewhere. If he had his own choice in his own work, it's very unlikely he was working 100-hour work weeks. It's very unlikely that by the time he and your grandmother had time to be together at night, it was 10:30. Very unlikely. Very unlikely that someone else was waking their kids up, your parents up, and putting them to sleep at night. Change has happened, and we can't rewind the world. Nothing is good or bad, better or worse. With development, with progress, with time, we get changes. Our world is different. And it doesn't serve us in any way to say better, worse, good, bad. We simply say, okay, here we are. But we look at it eyes wide open and we say, wow, that's so interesting. Maybe I actually could implement some of that in my life. So for example, if I worked, you know, 50, 60 hours a week at the company, at the office instead of 100, I'd bring in significantly less money, I'm aware of that. Maybe I wouldn't actually make it to senior vice president. But with all of that extra time that I could spend with family, with friends, doing yoga, meditating, my hobbies in nature, doing volunteer work, seva, engaged in something that makes a difference, isn't it possible that actually I would find myself much happier? On a deep level, than I think I will be by whatever this 100-hour work week promises me. At the end of however many years it's going to take me to become the person at the top of the company. Maybe there is some wisdom in what our grandparents and great-grandparents and ancestors taught us. And just to allow the idea to kind of percolate in your mind and really ask yourself, you say, how do we find peace? Well, I would say to you, what are the moments in your life in which you feel peace? Surely you have experienced peace at some point. Maybe just for a few moments. What are those moments? Are they moments in department stores shopping? Are they moments at weddings showing off your brand new clothes, knowing that everyone is jealous of you? Or are they moments of something much deeper? Something much richer? Ask yourself the moments in your life that you have felt bliss. What were you doing? Where were you? Chances are the moments are going to be moments that involve deep connection. Deep connection to the divine. Maybe through connection to another human being. Maybe through watching a sunset over the ocean. Maybe through lying on your back and looking at the stars in the night sky. Maybe through helping people, serving, allowing yourself to be used as an instrument in God's hands. Maybe singing kirtan with Puja Swamiji and the Ganga Aarti. But ask yourself, these are questions that, yes, I can guide you, of course, but you actually know the answer. The real key is allowing ourselves to disengage from the machinery of a system that says, oh, you want happiness? You need this much money, this title, this much power, this many followers on social media, this type of house, this type of car, this type of popularity. Just allowing yourself to be disengaged, and you can do it really through a process of Gyan Yoga. Really ask yourself, okay, yeah, it's nice to get a raise, it's nice to make money. But internally, just do kind of an inner check-in. How does that feel compared with the joy that you get in doing something different? Ask yourself. And the beautiful thing is you're very young. And so you've really got this opportunity to make a decision. And I'm not saying quit your jobs and, you know, go live in caves in the jungle. But you've got an opportunity to decide, what is your work week going to look like? What is your version of success? How much do you really need? I mean, this is a great question to ask yourself if you are anyone on a career path in which you believe that that path is going to bring you happiness. Have a check-in. You know, choose a few times a year, maybe a birthday, maybe the new year, maybe a holiday, but choose three or four moments a year. And just simply ask yourself, is it enough yet? Is it enough yet? Because every year, presumably, you're going to have more than you had the year before. So just keep asking yourself, is it enough? And yeah, you shake your head, no, it's never enough. It's never enough. And at some point, you realize that is so interesting. It's like, I don't know if you've ever tried to quench deep thirst with, you know, some kind of a sugary drink, a Coca-Cola or something. And despite what every single advertisement will tell you, it doesn't actually quench your thirst. Makes you more thirsty. The body is craving water, And when you throw sugar into it, it actually needs more water. When you're really hungry, and instead of having a proper meal, you have a bag of chips or cookies, like you decided, forget it, I don't have time to make a proper meal, I'll just eat a bag of potato chips. Well, your stomach is full, but you're not satiated. You don't actually feel like, oh, wonderful. Now I'm great. You feel like, oh, God, what did I do? You do that enough times and eventually you realize, potato chips are not the answer to when I'm really hungry. It's not actually giving me what my body is wanting. So don't rely on me. Ask yourself, how much is enough? And no one can answer it for you, but you can. And I think what you'll find is some direction there then about what your days will look like, what your weeks will look like, what your years will look like. Once you realize what it is that brings you bliss and peace, well, you go after it. And it's a beautiful time as you start your married life together. You know, spend some time, sit on the banks of Ganga together. You know, quiet in meditation, just the two of you, and really, really have these sorts of conversations. How much do we need? What are our priorities? Where is our joy going to come from? What are we looking at? And lastly, I would say, look at what you've seen. Because we've all got not only parents, but we've got our parents' friends. We've got the parents of our friends. There's a lot of people in the generation above us for us to look at and say, who is where I would like to end up? Who's got something that really feels to me like, yeah, that's what life's about? Not who's the one that just everybody thinks, well, buddy, odd me, hey. But really, who's got something that when you're with them, you feel like, yeah, this person, really. And then see how you can mold your life, or ask that person for some thoughts. That's where mentors come from. You know, we look at people who have something that we think, I would like to have that in my life. How'd you get it? And you learn.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati
with inspiration and transformation.
How can we stay in the present moment all the time? It's a wonderful question because what we know is the source of everything we want can only be obtained when we are in the present. We want to be happy, but you can only be happy right now. You cannot be happy tomorrow or yesterday. Your only opportunity for happiness is in this moment. You cannot be in peace yesterday or tomorrow. You can only be in peace in this moment. Now, if you are happy and in peace in this moment, chances are you'll carry that into the next moment, and the next moment, and the next moment. But if you're sitting right here, worrying about tomorrow, or daydreaming about yesterday, you have all sorts of feelings. Maybe you have nice memories, maybe you have some memories that are not so nice. Maybe you have hope. Maybe you have dreams. Maybe you have anxiety. I mean, there's a lot of different feeling states that we have when we think about the future. But happiness, even if I think, oh, when I get this thing, then I will be happy, that's an idea. That's not actually happiness. There's no happiness happening inside of me when I think, oh, when I get that car, then I'll be happy. That's just a concept. It's a thought. That's all it is. An idea. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't. Maybe I'll get the car. Maybe getting the car will make me happy. Maybe getting the car won't make me happy. Maybe I'll be happy for one day and then frustrated every day after that. But there's nothing for sure. Maybe I won't even get the car. So the happiness I theoretically am going to have in the future is merely an idea. The only possibility for real happiness is right here, right now. And here's what's interesting. If you can't access happiness now, it's very unlikely you're going to be able to access it in the future. Unless you change something inside of you. We think something's going to happen, that like from the sky, things are going to happen, things are going to change, then I will have happiness. But happiness comes from within, and either you have the ability to experience that from within through gratitude, through love, through being present, through service, through surrender. Or if you haven't developed any of those skills, do not kid yourself that some amount of money or some opportunity or some possession is somehow going to carry happiness into your life. If that were the case, the richest people would be the happiest people. But we actually know that isn't true. And so this moment, right here, right now, is all we have to work with. And that which we create in this moment stays with us into the next moment. So this is why so many different spiritual traditions have a practice of meditation, of contemplation, of mindfulness, of something that is requiring me to be here now, to not be in yesterday, not in regrets, not in, you know, wistful memories, not in tomorrow, either the anticipation or the anxiety, but just to be right here, right now. It's why there's so many practices of chanting, of prayer, of quiet meditation or contemplation. I mean, different religions, different traditions teach it differently. And the practices, of course, are slightly different, but one thing they all have in common is they bring you into the present moment. Right here, right now. I mean, yeah, you could theoretically be doing your japa while your mind is somewhere else. But I mean, who are you kidding? Right? I mean, japa is between you and God. Obviously, God knows if your mind's there. You know if your mind's there. So if you both know your mind's not there, what's the point? You're not kidding someone else. So they're all practices of coming into the present. And so as the questioner asked, how can we be in the present? Techniques practice. First to realize that it's not your fault that it's difficult. The nature of the mind is to jump around. This concept of a monkey mind is something that our scriptures, those writing commentaries on the scriptures, those, the sages, the saints, the rishis, have been talking about for hundreds and even thousands of years. So the monkey mind is not created by how much you have to do today. It's not created by your present job or family situation or social media. These are just newer opportunities for the mind to jump around. It's like they're new toys for the mind. But the nature of the mind is to jump. It's like you could give a monkey a tennis ball. You could give it a ball of string. You could give it a banana. I mean, you could give it 100 different things. It's going to play with them all. It's not the fault of the thing. The thing is just what the monkey is using at the moment to be a monkey. In the same way, the mind is just using what you offer to it. But its nature is to keep jumping. So whatever you give it, it's going to keep jumping. That's its nature. So don't feel badly. Don't berate yourself. Recognize it is the nature of the mind. But also that there's a lot of beautiful tools and techniques that our sages and our saints and our rishis have given us. And these techniques range from the very, very simple, what you could call just really sort of cognitive behavioral work. Watch the breath. Okay, even if you pull it out of religion, pull it out of spirituality, pull it out of devotion, just a behavioral practice, watch the breath. Brings you into the present moment. Be mindful. There's so many paths teaching mindfulness today that are separate from any religion. I mean, hospitals are teaching it. Corporations are teaching it. Schools are teaching it. Across America, across so much of Europe even. Because it's really good for us. It's good for the mind. It's good for the body. It's good for our productivity. So even if you don't have spiritual aims and objectives, you can bring practices of mindfulness. It's very simple. Mindful eating, mindful drinking. So many of us, when we eat, when we drink, when we walk, we're constantly doing other things. Whether we're actively on our phones or chatting with someone or watching TV, or whether our minds are just thinking about other things. When I get where I'm going, here's all the conversations I'm going to have, right? Walking to a meeting. Well, we're practicing all the conversations in our mind before we get there. But instead, can you just allow yourself to actually feel your feet as they touch the ground? Can you actually feel the water, the food going down into you? Can you just be aware of it? Be aware of the breath. Be aware of every step. Can you brush your teeth mindfully? I mean, really, everything we do is an opportunity to just be mindful. Right? When you brush your teeth, what are you thinking about? Well, many of us are planning the day, right? Maybe we didn't get enough sleep the night before. Maybe we overslept. We didn't make it to the gym. Whatever it is, but our minds are already going. Instead, mindfully brush your teeth. Mindfully walk. Whatever you do, bring mindfulness into it. And what that'll do is it'll bring you into the present moment. And obviously, if you can bring a spiritual component to it, it's going to be only that hundreds of times more powerful, more rich. Because then not only are you here now, but you're here now in love. You're here now in gratitude. You're here now in connection. So if you've got a devotional practice, as you're aware of the breath, another beautiful way to be here now is the practice of a mantra. Allow that recitation of the mantra to fill you with love, to fill you with divine connection. So there's lots and lots and lots of practices. But it takes practice. This is why we are taught abhyas. Abhyas in the Bhagavad Gita, why Krishna emphasizes abhyas. Because it doesn't come naturally. It's not the nature of the mind. So we train it. We train it. We train it. And the good news is that even though the mind is not actually like a muscle, biologically, like the tissue of the white matter and gray matter is not like the tissue of muscles, nonetheless, it actually works much like a muscle, I've discovered. Whatever you do with it is actually what it learns how to do. That which you strengthen is that which gets strong. That which you ignore is that which stays weak. The paths that you tend to go are the paths that tend to work for you. So use it like a muscle. Strengthen it. And it'll bring you, at the bare minimum, it'll bring you peace. At the bare minimum, it'll bring you an experience of joy. Because believe it or not, this moment is actually really beautiful. Doesn't mean you're not in the midst of all kinds of turmoil and things going on, but if you can isolate just the moment, not the story, not everything that led up to the moment, not everything that you've got to deal with after the moment, but just this moment, just this breath, it's actually really beautiful. So at the bare minimum, you get peace and an experience of joy. And if you bring spirituality into it, well, then the doors of everything open. And the practices are simple. Not easy, but simple.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.